Welcome to ZA Confidential. Top economist Mike Schussler and Gumtree Auto CEO Jeff Osborne have joined John Fraser for a timely and important chat on some worrying economic challenges. In this podcast, they explored topics which included the unemployment crisis, fuel price hikes, and the potential for the auto sector in Africa.
Welcome to ZA Confidential, and today we have a podcast where we're talking about a few vital issues. We normally talk about wine in our podcasts, but that's to come in the sequel to this. First of all, we're going to have a look at the job summit, we're going to have a look at the fuel price, at the pressure on the consumer, and the pressure on the government to get more consumers, people with money, by taking them out of that long, horrid queue of unemployment into productive and fulfilling work. Joining me today, we have the head of Gumtree Auto, Jeff Osborne. Jeff, good to see you again.
Good afternoon, John.
And one of our leading economic commentators, Mike Schussler. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John.
Mike is, of course, with economics.co.za, one of those organisations which does wonderful things with numbers. Mm-hmm. You can prove or disprove almost anything you want, can't you, Mike?
Yeah, I think we disproved life on Earth.
Okay, well, first of all, as it's just happening and fairly topical, the job summit. Now, I listened in to Cyril Ramaphosa's speech on Thursday, and I have to say he gives a good speech. He delivered it well. It was full of passion, commitment. He did seem a little bit tired, and I just found it a little underwhelming. We've got something like 27% unemployment. We've got half of our young people on the dole, and there just did not seem to be that big bang economic lift that the country needs. Am I being too cynical for a change, Mike?
No, you're not being too cynical. You know, if we look at the broader unemployment of South Africa, it's 9.6 million people. That is a huge number. That is more than the American unemployment number, the broader one, which is only 8 million. You can add the German one of just over 1.4 million, and you'd still have more unemployed people in South Africa than the first and the fourth biggest economy in the world combined.
And if you take percentages?
No, these are actual numbers of people.
If you
look at the number of employed, it's 12 times our size, two companies, the countries combined. The economies are 60 times in market exchange rates, ours, and I'm using, you know, average of a year. So it's a very scary thought. But just to put it into context, we've been creating 200,000 jobs a year. But the problem is we've got 600,000 people that are entering the market every year. So now to say I'm going to add, we hope that the job summit adds 200 or will create 275,000 jobs. Now I assume that it adds to the 200,000. So that leaves you with 475,000. That still doesn't cover the 600,000 people that want a job that enter the market every year. Look, there's a million people of that age group that come in, but some are going to be housewives, others are going to be students, other people are not interested in having a job, perhaps. So, you know, that puts the whole picture into perspective. So, yes, it is a damp squid because it's not ambitious enough. You are still going to get, for many years, until the population growth comes down, which it eventually will, you're going to create too little jobs.
Jeff Osborne, I think one of the big letdowns of the new democratic ANC governments of South Africa has been the failure to turn around education, particularly for young black people who emerge from school without the necessary skills, emerge from university with a downgraded qualification. As somebody who's been an employer in the past who has to deal with these issues, Do you share my sentiment that a hell of a lot more needs to be done?
Now, whilst that is perfectly true, John, however, if one reflects upon the situation that prevailed in Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, certainly Zimbabwe latter years, where the educational system, we understand, was of a very high standard, and you had a lot of people coming into the market, but there simply were no jobs because the economy couldn't support the supply. And, you know, listening to Mike, I fully agree. I think And certainly that is one of the problems, is the standard of education, but I think perhaps more important than that, almost certainly more important than that, is economic growth to support the job growth. And as long as we have issues like the property relocation debacle not being fully and clearly and transparently addressed.
You mean land grabs?
Land grabs. foreign investment is going to continue to be deterred in terms of investing.
Mike, is there anything, and I'm sure you've got a whole shopping list of things you would have liked to have seen the president announce, but is there anything which is practical and affordable that we could have seen come out of this job summit that didn't really seem to rise above the horizon?
Well, I think there are onto some things where they're going to open up the airwaves to more frequencies that he had with his other, he called it a stimulus package, but the visum requirements must just go away. In fact, we must just allow anybody in as long as they aren't on the Interpol list type of thing. If you're coming to spend money here, please do. That's the first thing. And I think there are many other things that we can do. Take away a lot of the red tape. I think it's politically impossible, perhaps, but we've got to rethink BEE. BEE hasn't benefited the majority of South Africans. We've got to rethink AA. We've got to rethink the labour market legislation. We've got to rethink the whole way of how this customs union works. We've got to make it to our advantage. Let me tell you what I mean. Why, if we have a customs union, do we not then just have one passport for five countries? Why do we have one entry point and after that it's a domestic flight? All those sort of things should be thought on. And if we are going to be part of the African Union's free trade area, then we need to implement that and get it going. And maybe it's better to start small and say, let's put the SACU countries already a free trade area, if you wish. Let's add Mozambique to it. Let's add Zimbabwe to it and start there. And then we go and say, where do we get our best bang for bucks for the infrastructure that we can put in place? Those are the sort of things I think people want to see. Would love to see. And also, most importantly, Jeff touched on it, but people want certainty. We need to know, like the mining Indaba thing, we want certainty with the mineral rights. We want certainty with everything that you want here. We want to tell you this is what we're going to do and this is what we're going to stick to. And let's leave out the land question. We can sort all those things out. If we have the growth, the government will have the money to buy the land. If we don't have the growth, we won't have it, and we'll have even worse situations.
Jeff, picking up the theme that Mike was addressing, you and I bumped into each other at a very noisy conference on the Kyalami racetrack in an open room where the cars were whizzing past us. And from what little I could hear of what was actually being said on the podium, there seemed to be, with people like former Trade and Industry Minister Alec Irwin, a push, a big push, to get the auto sector, which is your area of great specialisation, into a broader African context. Not necessarily building an auto plant in every African country, but using supply chains and components and all those good things. Does that excite you, or is it just politicians' pipe dreams?
No, I think it is real, John. And one can't ignore the fact that the motor industry in total contributes close to 7% towards our GDP. And a lot of that was obviously driven by the support program, original MIDP and then the APDP, and now there's a new program that's been designed to support the auto industry and to encourage continued and increased foreign investment in manufacturing facilities. And often the question is asked, well, why here? It was so far from the main markets, as it were. But I think the sentiment in the auto industry is that South Africa is the gateway to the rest of Africa. And I think that is critical. So I think there is certainly a very upbeat, positive sentiment towards the opportunities that are available to us in terms of doing business with the rest of Africa. But I just want to ask Mike a question, if I may. You made such a good point about this customs union. With Brexit, Mike, are there opportunities for us to be proactive as a government, given the uncertainty?
There is. I think the UK has always been closer to us and allowed us a lot more trade opportunities than the rest of Europe. So I can see increases for our wines and British supermarket sales, which we couldn't do under the European Union. On the European Union side, we can maybe package that same amount, but then to fewer countries, and we can re-look at, you know, where we want to go to. But I think, you know, Brexit to me is at the moment a little bit of an uncertain part of the world ahead of us. We don't know where it's going to go to. There are opportunities for the South Africans or Argentina or anybody else.
Boris Johnson knows.
Boris Johnson might know. I don't. But I think that's the one thing. And people are getting worried about that 29th of March deadline. And there's too many what-ifs. And we'll have to, as the globe, just see where it goes to. And, you know, we're just outsiders. But there are certainly opportunities.
Well, moving from Brexit onto something even more scary, fuel prices, Jeff. Yeah. We've just seen, I believe it was a record increase to a record level of fuel prices. Mm-hmm. And certainly there is a lot of debate on how the hell we can bring them down. Now, our fuel prices, as you well know, are calculated on the basis of global oil prices and the rand-dollar exchange rate. So there isn't a great deal of flexibility there. But within the amount you pay every time you buy a litre at the petrol station, there's all sorts of extra stuff, levies and so on. Do you think that the government is cognizant of the fact that there's a hell of a lot of pressure on them to try to bring down those levies, even within this horrible fiscal constraint whereby there just isn't a lot of flexibility in any of the forthcoming budgets?
And therein lies the problem, John. These levies and all the opportunities that have been exploited to milk more money out of the motorist have been ongoing. And, you know, if one reflects on 4 or 5 years ago, when we had a record high international oil prices and not a particularly strong rand either, we never saw the price levels we're seeing today. So clearly those levies have gone up. And, you know, I personally, and I used to talk about this, I was to some extent comforted by the fact that, yes, whilst our fuel prices at the pump are too high, and they probably always will be, comparably, they weren't bad if you compare it to Europe and the UK and other countries. But I think that gap is closing quite rapidly, and I think if you consider the spending power and the pressure under which the consumer finds themselves right now, they're definitely, this is a mounting crisis. And the only way clearly to do it is to either, through instilling higher levels of confidence, improve the exchange rate and get the rand at a better, more acceptable level, or the government, I think, should seriously have a look at all these add-ons, all these levies that have slowly but surely been attached to the fuel price of fuel. You know, one of which is the most controversial one, of course, is the road levy. Which was ring-fenced up until, I think, 1989, and then Warren Duplessis, who was then Minister of Finance, took a ring-fence away and said, we're still going to charge it, but it's going to go into government coffers. And then we were charged, they tried to impose the toll system on it. So, you know, there's a lot of lack of transparency with this all concerned. I think it's time for a serious tidy-up.
Mike, you're both a motorist and an economist. You must feel the pain yourself.
Yeah, I feel the pain. I want to join Jeff here in a very simple way. Is when the oil price was going down, the Minister of Finance took the chance to increase the tax rates on fuel. And now we're feeling the impact thereof when the oil price is heading back up. As Jeff pointed out, it's not a record high oil price. The rand is also not at record highs. So this is a very strange situation that it comes out now, but it's actually a good thing. I think also government has had a wake-up call that they can't just increase taxes everywhere because they're going to feel this at the voting booths, I think. And then, you know, very simply put, it's not just the oil price that people have to pay for, but things like electricity, water, which all these administrative prices that are going up higher than the rate of inflation. In fact, if you look at food inflation in the last 15 months, you're probably looking at 3-4% on average, whereas, you know, the fuel tax and all those other things have been going in double digits. That's a problem.
Jeff, looking into the future, we won't need petrol anymore. We're going for electric cars. You read a lot about it. Is it going to happen and how fast?
Yeah, look, it is certainly a reality. There's already as we know, legislation that has been passed in certain countries where they've set deadlines for gasoline-free zones and cities around the world. But where South Africa is concerned, this is going to happen. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Although battery technology has still got a way to go, my sense has always been that the hybrid will probably be more prominent before it becomes an all-electric car. Sorry for Elon Musk and all the rest of it. But where South Africa is concerned, it's going to take a whole lot longer. First of all, we've got a much older car park here.
Car park being the pool of vehicles.
Yeah, PARC, apparently, yeah. And an ageing one, as it's getting older all the time. We don't have the infrastructure to support the recharging of electric cars. And also we have coal-fired power stations. So, you know, is it really going to be that green? I think that the jury's still out on that one. But inevitably, I guess it's going to come. Change is reality. And you spoke early on about the NAMSA conference where you and I sat in that noisy, breezy, open-air room. And there was a gentleman from ex-South African guy, ex-Cadillac, and he made a comment which I thought was quite profound. He said that we all know there's been dramatic technological evolution and development over the last 5 years within the motor industry, and that's a fact. Mm. He said, forget about all that. He said, the next 5 years, there'll be more technological and innovation in the motor industry than we've seen over the last 100 years. So I guess the point I'm making is change is inevitable, it's going to happen. But it will be, South Africa will be behind the curve. Mm. All of that said, and I'm going to finish on this one, it was 15 years ago and diesel was the magic word. That was the silver bullet. Wrong, they got it wrong then. Diesel are now out of favour, you can't give them away in Europe. It's become a huge problem for the motor industry. And I'm wondering if history might not repeat itself. I don't think, and I'm personally convinced, that this all-electric car is the answer in terms of protecting the environment.
What?
Yeah, I tend to agree, you know, to link one to one technology, that might not be. I saw another thing, that the hydrogen engine on a few trains is coming back in Europe, and that tells me that maybe electric isn't going to be the only thing. Yeah. The other thing is technology always takes longer than the optimists tell us, and it's always quicker than the pessimists. So it's a thing, and here in South Africa, where I agree with Jeff, not only is the car park older, I think the big thing is the distances are big. And electric, there's a lot of fear, distance fear on electric, because the batteries, and you're going to have to charge those batteries on the way to Durban. Mm. And until we get the infrastructure where you can charge it, because at the moment the best is about a half an hour.
Or swap it.
Yeah. We're going to look at a different picture for South Africa. And I cannot see that just disappearing. What's also interesting is that, you know, other parts will also play a role, like driverless cars and self-driving cars. But that's neither here nor there right now. I think for the next 5 to 10 years in South Africa, you are going to be based on oil-based products in the main.
Fully agree.
Okay, and I think, unfortunately, we're running out of time. So just one quick question to both of you. We've had our president in situ as head of the ANC since the end of last year and as president of the country since the first quarter, I think it was, of this year. Mike, are you a Ramaphobic or are you a Ramaphoric? I know there are all these words that go around. In other words, how do you think the president's doing in what must be a horribly tiring and very challenging job?
I think the problems are much bigger than we first realised. I think the fight back is incredibly stupid, but it is continuing, making his life difficult. And even if he had all the free rein, I don't think he's as much of a free marketeer as people think. So he's still a player for big government, but maybe not quite the sort of government style that many before him in the ANC had. So I think I'll be a little bit Ramaphobic, but perhaps, you know, with a bit of optimism thrown in.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think he has an incredibly difficult job ahead of him. But for what it's worth, I have met him on a number of occasions as a customer of mine, and then when he was Minister of Mineral Energy some years ago. So I have a high regard for him. But I think he's in a very difficult position, a very difficult place right now. A lot of what he says obviously has to has to be seen as, I believe, as pre-election rhetoric. But he's what we have, and I think he's probably the best of what is available. And whilst it's going to be difficult, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Well, many thanks to Jeff Osborne and to Mike Schüssler. I'm John Fraser, and that's been ZA Confidential.